irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and every Monday from 11 a.m. till noon Pacific time, we will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising your children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, our guest today is Lee McCormick, who is the founder of Ranch Recovery Center in Nunley, Tennessee, and the Canyon Treatment Center in Malibu, California. He is also co-founder of Nashville's Integrative Life Center, as well as their community recovery program. Through the organization of Spirit Recovery, Inc., Lee facilitates the production of healing and recovery conferences and spiritual journeys around the world. He is the executive producer of the documentary Dreaming Heaven, in which he plays a leading role. He is the author of The Spirit Recovery Meditation Journal, Meditations for Reclaiming Your Authenticity, and co-author of Dreaming Heaven, The Beginning is Near. Lee, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Hey, man, it's good to be here.
Well, I'm good to have you on. I had a chance to read part of the book. I had a chance to go online and read some of what other people are saying. And it was great to go on and kind of read what people who are purchasing the book and reading. So let me start with a few of the reviews of your latest book, which is Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag. And some of these reviews state, this book could benefit any of us struggling with the loss of a job, a loved one, a broken relationship, etc. Another one reads, if you have been touched by or know someone who has been touched by addiction or obsession of any kind, this book is another tool to support the healing process. We have one that reads, what I liked about the book is the fact that it doesn't have a one-solution-fits-all approach. Instead, readers are encouraged to examine themselves and find their own path of healing from the numerous tools and suggestions offered. And the last one I have here says, readers are constantly encouraged to go back to nature and find their healing. This is something that I found particularly appealing. So, Lee, with that said, how do you describe the Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag?
Well, you know, the book is really two parts. The first half of the book is my story, and it picks up when I was checking myself into a treatment center 18 years ago. And then it follows a timeline. Of course, it gives backstory of my life as a kid and all that. But it follows the timeline of the first two, I guess, the first 4 or 5 years of my life from the time I had gone to treatment, you know, and living through the experiences that led me to the way I see things today, and that really the experiences that led me to really wake up is the way I put it in my life. And then the second half of the book, each chapter is a different practice, a different point of view that either Mary or myself have shared or used or developed over time, you know, in working with other people. Mary and I both have a pretty eclectic background. She is a therapist and has been for 25 years, I think, 26 years. You know, so we have a real broad array of experiences. And, of course, what both of us do is really grounded in our own personal lives and what worked for us. You know, well, so the, The book is pretty broad, actually. You know, my story part gives people something to relate to, and a lot of times you'll see aspects of yourself in reading somebody else's story. And then the second half of the book is what do I do about it if I really want to change my life?
Right, and that's one of the things that I liked is the second part is sort of here are some of the tools. You know, pick the tools that are going to fit best for yours. And I liked it as far as telling your own story is sort of, you know, here's something that worked for me. You know, if your story is similar, if you have some of these things, you know, we can already show you that this works. So I like that. Now, when you guys were going to name this book, where did you come up with Medicine Bag? How did you happen to put that in, and was there a specific reasoning behind choosing that wording?
Yeah, there really is. I personally have part of my life is doing work with different Native people. Mm-hmm. You know, I've spent quite a bit of time in Peru, in the Andes with the Quero people, and then I spent a few years doing work with Don Miguel Ruiz, who wrote the Four Agreements. Mm-hmm. I have a home in central Mexico. You know, I've done a lot of ceremonial work. I've done a lot of what we call shamanic work or shamanic experiences. And the medicine bag came both from Mexican traditions and from the Peruvian, the Quero traditions. And it's literal. It's actually kind of multidimensional, but uh-huh. It's literal in a sense of when we begin to work on ourselves and our life, we have the opportunity to create literally a medicine bag of tools, you know, and practices and connections. And the medicine bag can evolve and change and grow, and it does over time. But I've carried what I call a medicine bag or a mesa for 10 years now, I guess. And, you know, my medicine bag is, it has tokens in it, stones, different objects that for me are a direct connection to the people, the places, the connections that that I really call on that feed and support my life. You know, it's a very powerful practice, and because it's something that can morph and evolve over time, creating a medicine bag when you first start working on yourself or working with yourself, it gives you something to focus on, and it gives you something palpable that you can hold in your hand. You can take it out, you know, a couple times a week, take all the pieces out, and really connect to the different relationships that frame your life, and where are you in those relationships? What's going on with uh-huh. you in those relationships? And there's a chapter actually in the book that's dedicated to that.
Well, what it made me think of, and by the way, I think it's phenomenal as far as being able to carry something around with you that has so many great positive memories and things that will instantly bring you up, you know, psychologically. And it doesn't need to be something that's purchased through Big Pharma. So for that reason, I love it. But what it reminds me of is that I was blessed with the opportunity to be a room dad for my kids going back to when they were in kindergarten through about fifth grade. And in kindergarten, one of the things that I did was at one of the conferences that I was at, one of the programs there did a lot of work with the American Indians and used a lot of their cultural beliefs. And they had given me these stones, just a series of stones, and I actually had then asked for more of them and told them what I was going to do. And I used those to give to the children. And when they would do something, I'd go, "Wait, I caught you," and they'd look nervous, and I'd go, "I caught you doing something good, and I'm going to give you this stone that represents bravery, or I'm going to give you this stone, you know, that represents courage," mm-hmm. or this, you know, and I probably went through 40 or 50 of those stones and just giving them out. And one of the most beautiful things happened to me about a year and a half ago is one of the children that I had given that stone to saw me in a restaurant, a local restaurant. Well, he must be 20, 21 years old now. And he came up to me and he pulled the stone out of his pocket. And he said, I just want to let you know I still have this and I keep it with me everywhere I go. It was one of the most touching things that's ever happened to me.
Oh, that's great.
So when you're telling this story about the medicine bag and the things that you're putting in it, I can see the power, not only for you, the person carrying it, but for anyone else that you choose to give something to that represents something very positive in their life. So anyway, I love it.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, those threads through time are really amazing when we get to a place to where we recognize them and you realize, you know, that everywhere we go as we move through our life, we're literally creating threads and connections to people. It's very powerful.
Now, you mentioned that the first part of the book, again, goes into your particular story. So if you don't mind sharing for a few minutes, I'd love for you to share a little bit about your story and how that really propelled you to the practices that you now have in the book.
Yeah, okay. Well, I was... The story really picks up when I was checking myself into the treatment center in Arizona that I went to. And like all of us, you know, I was born into my family, of course.
Uh-huh.
And with my family, as with all of our family, you know, there came this big family dynamic. There was all of the expectations, all of the roles, all of the family legacy and history, all of that stuff that each of us inherit when we're born into this world. You know, we're really born into the world a clean slate. We're these little cosmic beings. We don't really know where we come from. Not really. You can believe what you want, but do you know for a fact? I don't think so. So we come into the world this clean slate, and we're born into our, you know, into our human bodies. And from the moment we're born, we start being downloaded with information. We start gathering this overlay of identity and definition. And, you know, I'm just like everyone else in that. And so, you know, growing up, my life was interesting. There's parts of it that were challenging. I won't really get into those details so much. Most of that's in the book. You know, but I grew up as a man in my family, and there were a lot of expectations of what being a quote-unquote man were supposed to be. And there were a lot of rules and, you know, and I was no different than 90% of the guys born into this culture. And I didn't really connect with a lot of that. And I grew up believing that I am, you know, how well I do in the eyes of the people that that I love and respect. So, you know, as though I didn't have an identity beyond how well I live up to expectations and how well I can fulfill the roles that my family or, you know, your community or your religious affiliation puts on you. So, you know, it's almost like you could say we don't really have an inherent value, that our value is determined by our roles in the world and how well we fit into those roles and how well we perform those roles. Well, not knowing who I was, I grew up taking on what I took on and, you know, trying to be good enough. I was fortunate that for me, you know, I was born into a family that had a connection to ranching, to the land, to the ocean. I grew up on the beach in Florida. And I always had a really deep connection to nature, you know, to the ocean,
nice,
to the woods, to cattle and horses. And in fact, I live on a ranch today. You know, I'm surrounded by cows and horses most of the time. But that was my go-to place. You know, that relationship with nature and what I call the real world was my grounding place. Well, then my relationship with what I call the matrix, which is this human made-up cultural thing, that didn't go so great. I had fun. I went to school. You know, I started playing music when I was 16. I moved to Nashville when I was 21 with a band. And, you know, the lack of comfort in being, or the lack of awareness of who am I really, that lack of awareness creates an anxiety and it creates an insecurity. So I ended up just gravitating toward the things that I was comfortable with. You know, playing music was great, cowboying was great, surfing was great, but I didn't really have any interest in the business world. It just kind of looked like crazy town to me. And, you know, when you grow up with no real true sense of self, like who am I really, when you grow up trying to live up to all these expectations that we all do, there's a disconnection that happens between our heart and spirit and our, I guess, our ego mind, our, you know, our worldly identity. And that disconnection just creates a lot of anxiety. It creates, you know, there's a lot of fear there. And so we start chasing life from the outside in, trying to be good enough. And this is, again, it's, you know, my story around that's not unusual. We are the most medicated culture in the history of the world, and there's good reason for it, because we're, you know, I mean, I don't mean this in a negative sense, but we're all really just trying to fake our way through life to earn a good enough and to, you know, to have a place and for ourselves and to be comfortable and happy. And the truth is there's very, very few of us that have found a true sense of authenticity and live from that place.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I think you bring up a great point. And I think with the roles, I believe we're probably fairly close to the same generation. There were roles that were laid out for you, and if you were a male coming up in that time, so much of your identity and your success was tied to, you know, what you chose to do and how well you provided then for your family. And I don't know that we were really given that opportunity to look inward and to, as you said, you know, determine more of what our true identity is, as opposed to being judged by how well we perform out there, you know, on the things that were laid out for us to be measured by. Does that sound about right?
Oh, yeah. No, I think you're exactly on it. I think that's exactly right. And, you know, there's a whole different set of expectations for men than there is for women, of course.
Yep.
But, and it's they're very comparable. Uh-huh. You know, when you're born in a male body, depending on where you land and who your people are, there's a whole story about what a man is.
Yeah.
You know, and the same thing, when a person is born as a female, there's a whole story about what a woman is, what a good girl is, what a bad girl is. And it doesn't have anything to do with who we are really. It has absolutely nothing to do with the truth of who we are, you know, and culturally, our culture doesn't really care about the truth of who we are. The culture cares that we're compliant with the roles of the culture.
Uh-huh.
You know, and we're seeing that. We're seeing the stress cracks all through our culture today, and the conflict and the incongruence and the anger and the fear. You know, you see it all around you every day. You know, and of course, we want to believe. We give our faith to the things that we're taught as children. A lot of times I think, you know, we accept the beliefs that are passed down to us as being real and true and right and good. Even when it doesn't actually feel right, we'll still agree with it because as kids, there isn't a whole lot you can do about it. Then we forget.
Uh-huh.
That maybe I didn't really believe that stuff, but we forget that we didn't believe it, and so we call it the truth. Well, it's not the truth. It's just what the people that were teaching us believed.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just a real setup for there to be a lot of conflict later on in life. And the truth is, after years of living and working and around, you know, in the healing work and in the recovery world, the truth is all of that pain and conflict and suffering and fear, it all serves us if we are fortunate enough to wake up one day and decide, you know what, I don't want to live with all this stuff in my life anymore.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've got to get back to whoever it is I really am. And that's even where, you know, developing addictions or eating disorders, there are a lot of the, you know, the issues that you work with that have a label and a diagnosis. Those, from my point of view today, they're terrible and they're painful and they're a real problem to address. They're a real challenge to address. But they're the invitations from life to question everything again.
Uh-huh.
You know, at least that's where I took it. That's the way I approach it in the recovery programs that I've been a part of, is that your addiction or your eating disorder is an invitation for you to come to terms with your truth again. Because these addictions, these diagnoses, have developed from a place of disconnection and dis-ease within us. They're not a conviction of you as a person. You're not a bad person. You've just done the best you could cope with and deal with the incongruence of the world you've been living in or the trauma you've been living with. And so what? It became an addiction or it became an eating disorder. It's like, big deal. That's not the focus. We need to deal with those issues so you can move beyond it, but we're not going to define you by that issue. You may have an addiction, but what you are is not an addict. You're a human being. You may suffer from, you know, an eating disorder, but that eating disorder, unless you choose to, does not define you.
That's where
I part ways with tradition.
No, and I completely agree. And in fact, one of the examples, you know, that somebody had said is that, if you had a broken arm, people wouldn't then refer to you as, oh, hey, broken arm, come here. You know, but yet they will say, hey, alcoholic, you know, they'll point. But so they will make these judgments and try and tag people on it. And one of the things that I liked, and you mentioned the word recovery, one of the things that I liked about reading the book was that I really felt that this was something that everybody could take something from, not just somebody, quote, in recovery, but anybody that's trying to find a greater level of authenticity within themselves. So was that your goal? I mean, you know, do you look at it and say that all of us should be able to find some value here?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, we're all living our own unique relationship with this world that we live in and the cultures that we live in, you know, and I think in varying degrees, we've all been taught that it's more important that we fit into the system than it is we fit into our own skin.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's more important that we contribute to society than it is that we express our own heart and soul, you know, during the course of our life. And then we wonder, why is the world such a mess? Well, the world's such a mess because the people are all, we're all phony.
Uh-huh.
In varying degrees. And, you know, and that's not a judgment. It's just, you know, we're all trying to get by. And then the nature of our culture is such that, you know, by the time if you decide to go to college or you're fortunate enough to go to college and you don't have cash to just pay for it, well, you get out of school, you got student loans. And then you go
uh-huh.
buy a car, well, you got a car loan. And, you hook up with another person and, you know, you find a partner, however that looks. And you buy a house, well, you got another loan. Well, before you know it, you've got all this mountain of debt going on around you, and you don't have a choice to do anything but get out there and run your butt off trying to keep all the wolves at bay so you can hold together this frame of what you've been taught a successful life looks like. But we don't own that stuff. That stuff owns us.
That's,
you know,
a great point.
It's kind of funny. It's
uh-huh.
interesting. Yeah. So, you know, the question and the opportunity for all of us, I think, is do you really have faith in the truth of who you are? I mean, can you imagine honoring the truth of who you are and who you were created to be first? Can you honor that above the opinions of the world and honor that above the expectations of the world so that you might recover or reclaim a relationship with that truth as the center of your life? And then we can let the roles, we can let the job description, we can let you know, the friends and the country club relationships or the guys in the hood. We can let everything else in our life be something we interact with and that we do and we enjoy or we make use of, but our self-worth and our identity is not dependent upon that relationship. Mm-hmm. I don't need my job in order to have value. I have value because God saw fit to create me and I'm here.
Yep.
You know, you know, it's like a first things first.
Yep. Well, you know, you mention a lot in the book about nature, and I want to take a break, but when we come back, let's talk a little bit about how you've incorporated nature into this and that being such a key component in our being able to break away from some of these things that have started to own us and use nature to find our own true authenticity. Everybody stay with us. You're listening to Answers for the Family. We'll be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest today is Lee McCormick, and we are talking about spirit recovery. And for anybody that, if you're sitting at your computer and if you want to follow along with us, you can open up another window on your computer and you can follow along. You can go to their website at spiritrecovery.com. So that's spiritrecovery.com. You can open up another window. You can follow along with us. And really start to see how we can reach our own true authenticity. And so with that said, Lee, let's talk a little bit about how you've incorporated nature into the book and how it helps us reach that level of authenticity.
Okay. Well, the basis for it, you know, we are part of nature.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because, you know, our human, I don't know what it is, our human craziness, we seem to have we think we've separated ourselves out, you know, like we humans are in our own little deal here, and the rest of creation is just here to serve us, which is a little crazy.
Yes.
And obviously has led to an ecological mess in our world, you know, and living in a physical body and being an animal, and we are an animal, and, you know, our spirit does dwell in this physical body. We have an innate, irrevocable connection to the earth. We're, you know, our physical body is of the earth, and our spirit, our consciousness is from the light, is of the light, you know.
Uh-huh.
Jesus said, you know, you are the light of the world. So, you know, we're emerging between aspects of creation, between the body of the earth and the cosmos or the cosmic or whatever you want to call it.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's a frequency to our being. There's a resonance to our being. And when we're happy and we're balanced, and I mean, it's measurable, that frequency, that resonance. You see it in when you do brainwave readings, and it's, you know, even in body temperature. The temperature of the body is a reflection of the frequency that's in the body. All of this is scientifically measurable. Well, Everything that we do, every thought that we have, every belief that we hold, the experiences that we live through in our life, everything that we eat and drink. I mean, diet is incredibly important in the tuning or the balance of our frequency, your frequency as a human being. You made a remark a little bit ago about the big pharma thing. You know, pharmaceutical drugs don't rebalance anything in the body. They, especially in psychiatric cases, they manipulate brain chemistry.
Or mask it.
Yeah, they mask it or they manipulate it, but they're not correcting anything. They're not, you know, an antibiotic is one thing, but, you know, so we are a frequency of life, and that frequency of life is directly connected to nature and the earth because we're not separate. We're a part of the fabric. We're a part of the whole. We don't exist as a separation from. And when you start doing healing work and you start doing awareness work with yourself, to come back into alignment and to develop an awareness and to take actions that will help support our coming back into balance again, just it raises our whole frequency again.
Yep.
You know, and it brings us back into a natural state, and that natural state is an imbalanced state. And these days, our culture, you know, we're an incredibly imbalanced bunch of people in the U.S. You know, I mean, we run from the neck up. We live in our head all the time. We're thinking all the time. You know, we're trying to figure everything out from a mind point of view. We're trying to decide what we want from a mind point of view. Then how do we get it from a mind point of view? And it's very rare that we drop in to our heart, our center, our spirit, drop into ourselves on a deeper level and ask ourselves, what do we really want from that level?
Uh-huh.
You know, what brings peace and what brings balance and what brings a sense of fulfillment? And nature is the grounding place. It's the reflecting place. Nature is our family.
Yep.
You know, there's an aspect of the book that talks about going outside and just and connecting to the trees and grounding yourself up against the body of a tree, the trunk of a tree. You know, until we can slow down and extract ourselves out of the madness and the chaos and the just kind of the frenzied nature of this world that we live in, how in the world could you ever really find a different perspective on life? As long as you're in the chase, you lose any awareness that there's even a chase going on, and you're running as fast as you can all the time, and you don't even realize you're running all the time because that's all you've been doing for years.
Yep.
So nature's the opportunity to shift that and to just stop and go connect. And there are several aspects of the book that are directed to that.
Well, and it's one of the things that I like, and I noticed and when I was looking at the reviews, I loved the fact that even one of the people that had given review touched specifically on that part of it. But for instance, for me, I'm very fortunate with where I live, close to the beach, but also there is what we call a eucalyptus park. It's called Butterfly Park. And it actually has so many of the things that butterflies eat that the butterflies that come from Canada and that go all the way down to Mexico stop in this park and mate and do whatever they do. But so every year, about this time of year, we have hundreds of monarch butterflies all around us. And that's where I go to walk the dogs every morning before I start my day, is to go in there, walk around with the dogs, and then sit down and just appreciate the fact that we have this beautiful place that smells wonderful because of the eucalyptus and, you know, all of the other plants and everything that's there. It's a great way to start the day and sort of, you know, clear my head of any of those problems that I might have woken up and started thinking about. But so that's the one thing. The other thought that when you brought up about the happy frequency, I love the fact that you brought that up. And I noticed you also have made a movie that we'll touch on in a little bit. I have one of the scripts that I'm working on, and I've now produced 4 movies, but on one of the scripts that I'm personally working on, our protagonist in a speech talks about the fact that we need to be measuring GNH. We spend too much time focusing on the GNP of what our country does, but the GNH is the gross national happiness. And he talks about the fact that you can measure this, and why we don't focus on that, I can't imagine. You know, why we don't at a national level focus on the fact that if we can do this, what better gift could we give, you know, this person in this is running for office, but what better gift can they provide for their citizens than to improve the GNH rather than the GNP?
Yeah, I agree with you completely. You know, and you know what the truth is, if you step back and look at it, is that if we stop long enough, if our system, if we were to all slow down long enough to come to terms with, well, how happy am I really? Our whole system might change. And boy, when you start talking about our system, our overall system changing, you know, then you're an anarchist.
Well, yeah, you make a lot of politicians very uncomfortable.
Well, it's a frenzy. You know, we live in this country in some kind of an insane consumption, you know, possessions materialistic frenzy.
Yeah.
That if I don't have the car, if I don't have that other house, if I don't have more clothes, if I don't pay for the most expensive school for my kids, if I'm not doing all those things, then I'm not good enough, and then I can't be happy. Well, the truth is, none of that's true. And as long as we tell ourselves that's what's true, then, you know, we're going to keep running like the hamster in the wheel. But, you know, I've spent enough time in other cultures and other countries where they don't have 20% of the stuff we have. They have a lot more
happiness,
peace and fun in their day-to-day life than we do.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, better off. We're not better off for our absolute obsession and addiction to materialism in this country, and it's not sustainable. It's not going to continue the way it's been the last 100 years. That's just a fact.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the examples that I give of that is that while on the in the Dominican Republic, and I was there, I was actually touring a program that's there on the island, and there was a bunch of kids, and I just sat back and I watched them, and they were playing soccer barefoot on a gravel soccer field. You know, and there was little patches of grass, but a lot of it was just a fine dirt or gravel. And I sat there for about an hour and I just watched them. Not one of them complained about anything. They had a ball playing soccer. You know, and so just to look at that, and then I, you know, thought about the same thing. If you put that same situation in our country, and you would have the kids complaining about that's hurting their feet, but you would have the parents in an uproar that the city hadn't come out and fixed it, you know, and how dare they not do this? And we would be focused on every possible negative thing that they could find out about that particular activity, rather than just focusing on the fact of they're having fun.
Yeah, I mean, the point is to play soccer.
Yeah.
not the shoes that you're wearing or you know, who's watching. Or I mean, it's just insane. We really brainwash ourselves with all the reasons why we shouldn't be happy, and then somebody shows up to sell us what will make us happy if we can just acquire it. But the underlying message is that, you know, you don't deserve to be happy unless you possess everything in the world. And so you're so busy chasing the possessing it that you don't even know how to be happy. Hell, happy's pretty simple. A lot simpler than it's been cast in this country. And, you know, it's just a culture of people is no different than an individual. It responds the same. You know, when an individual gets really out of balance and goes off the deep end in one direction or another, Eventually you get so uncomfortable, life gets so miserable and so crazy that one of two things happens. You either die from it or you wake up and you do what's necessary to recreate how you live your life. And our culture is the same way. Our culture is either going to implode and cave in from our insanity and obsessiveness, you know, or we're going to wake up and the system's going to change. You know, which way is it going to go? Dude, I have no idea. But these days, I'm not betting on us waking up. I'm betting on something imploding to get everybody's attention. But it's the same thing, you know, when you deal with addictions and all of the issues that we work with in the recovery business. You know, some people just demand a lot of pain and misery and suffering before they're willing to question what they believe and what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of us wake up easier than others, and some of us, we're going to kill ourselves before we ever find the opportunity to question ourselves sincerely. So,
yeah.
You know, I just see the culture the same way as an individual, really.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I just looked up, we've got about eight more minutes, and I want to make sure that we talk about, because now, you know, we're talking about it on a grand scale, but on a more individual scale, tell us about the Integrative Life Center in Nashville and how it incorporates some of the elements of the book so that individuals can now start making the changes they need in their life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the Integrative Life Center, it's integrativelifecenter.com. We have a full continuum recovery program in Nashville. And what I mean by full continuum is we work with people from, you know, from primary level of care, like the introduction into recovery work, all the way through extended care stays, to just sober living. And our program is really focused, and we keep bringing the focus back to the quality of life that you're waking up to every day. What are you creating as a life, consciously or unconsciously? What's sabotaging you in living a happy life? You know, what's happened with you or to you over the course of your life that's undermined your faith in yourself and your faith in life that we can help you unravel and look at and move through and move beyond? You know, our philosophy and our perspective is really all about life and healing, and the power that we hold as individuals to step into the depth of our pain and our suffering, the depth of our challenges, you know, whatever the diagnosis is, and that we really do have the ability to address that stuff and to work through that stuff and then to let it go. And it takes time. Uh-huh. You know, and we've created a really cool community here. We do refuge recovery work, which was created by Noah Levine, who lives in L.A.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we do Buddhist recovery work. We do Native American sweat lodges and ceremonies. We go to 12-step meetings. You know, it's a very eclectic culture because one thing I've learned over 18 years working in the recovery business, if the only thing you offer people is a 12-step program, you're only going to reach about 25% of the people. And, you know, good, bad, or otherwise, that outcome was not acceptable to me. So, you know, the 12-step programs are great, and a lot of people don't like it or don't resonate with it or have had a bad experience, and so they want nothing to do with it. Well, that should not preclude them from finding help and support in them addressing their life. So we've just blended a lot of things together, and we give our clients an opportunity to make choices, and then we support them in holding an accountability. You know, you still have to have structure.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to have discipline, you know, develop discipline. You still got to learn to show up for yourself and to work through your stuff. But it's not, look, you either do it our way or you're wrong and bad. That's just crazy. That's ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
ILC is a really cool program. We work with eating disorders. We work with mental health issues, you know, depression, anxiety, a lot of trauma work. And then, of course, we work with addictions as they present themselves in a lot of different fashions.
Now, is that about the same with the Canyon Treatment Center in Malibu as well?
You know, I'm not affiliated with the Canyon at all anymore. I was the founder of it.
Okay.
Canyon, yeah, the Canyon is great, but I don't have anything to do with it. You know, I started three or four different treatment programs, and, you know, I love creating things. So I would start them and get them going, and then for one reason or another, I would get out and I'd go end up going somewhere else and doing something else. But I'm very involved in the Integrative Life Center here in Nashville.
Now, again, we've got just a couple of minutes. You know, if you had just one takeaway that you would like readers to gain from the book or even from this interview, what would you want them to take away as that one main thing?
That you are worthy of living the life that you would choose for yourself, that you are worthy, you're worth it, and you're good enough. I don't care what anybody's told you, what you may have come to believe over the years, you're good enough or you wouldn't exist. You wouldn't be here. And every one of us is deserving of the opportunity to live the life that we would choose for ourselves. And yeah, it takes some work to get there, and it takes some courage, and it takes some staying power.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you're worth it. And that's what we're suffering from collectively in our world, is that there are just too few people who are living really genuine, honest, open lives and saying out loud, you know, what they see as good enough or not good enough, and living life from a deep place of authenticity. But we're all worth it. That's why we're here.
Okay. And what is the best way for people to reach you or to get more information about the programs, or if you have any upcoming speaking engagements or conferences, what is the best either website or phone number for them to go to? Because I'm sure that there are plenty of people out there going, okay, this is great. How do I take that next step?
The Integrative Life Center number is 615-891-2226. 615-891-2226. That's the Integrative Life Center in Nashville. And it's also integrativelifecenter.com.
Okay.
And then you can reach me also through spiritrecovery.com.
Right. Okay, perfect. Yeah, that's one of the ones that we've got. And for anybody out there, if you're driving, if you can't write this down, please don't worry about it. Go to our site, The Answers for the Family. We have it on our site. There's a link that you can go from there directly to Lee's site and gain whatever information you have. Lee, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate this. I would love to have you back because I feel like there's so much more I'd love to touch on. So,
anytime, Alan. I appreciate
okay.
it, man.
Yeah, and do you have any speaking engagements specifically maybe on the West Coast? Because I'd love to get together as well.
Man, not on the West Coast, I don't. I'm going to be in Fort Lauderdale in mid-October at an addictions conference leading a workshop there. I'll be in Denver the 9th, 10th, and 11th of October at a conference at Mile High Church.
Okay.
But no, give me a good excuse to come back to LA and I'll do it. My wife and I lived in Malibu off and on for 10 years.
Well, I'll see if we can put together a good excuse and we can get together. Again, thank you so much for coming on. Keep up the good work and let's continue to help people gain as much authenticity in their life as possible.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Have a good one.
All right, take care. And
all
for
right.
All right, and for everybody out there, please, if you are listening to us through iTunes or through Stitcher, go to that section where it says to evaluate us. You know, tell people what you feel. Tell people what you think. You know, if you think that it would be good for a certain type of person, put it down there so that more people can come to this show and enjoy, get entertained, and maybe in some cases get educated. So, again, thank you, everybody. Be good humans. Have a great week, and be back with us next Monday for Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.